of Exodus, chapter 3. Book of Exodus, chapter 3. We'd like to read a very familiar account, verses 1 through verse 15. Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called on him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here am I. And he said, Draw not hither. Put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place wherein thou standest is holy ground. Moreover, he said, I am the God of thy father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people, which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. And I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of the land unto a good land and a large, unto a land flowing with milk and honey, into the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites, the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites. Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel is come unto me, and I have also seen the oppression wherewith the Egyptians oppressed them. Come now therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. And Moses said unto God, Who am I, that I should go unto Pharaoh, and that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt? And he said, Certainly I will be with thee, and this shall be token unto thee, that I have sent thee. Now pass, when thou hast brought forth the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God upon this mountain. And Moses said unto God, Behold, when I come unto the children of Israel, and shall say unto them, The God of your fathers has sent me unto you, and they shall say to me, What is his name? What shall I say unto them? And God said unto Moses, I am that I am. And he said, Thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, I am, hath sent me unto you. And God said moreover unto Moses, Thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, The Lord God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob hath sent me unto you. This is my name forever, and this is my memorial unto all generations. What we read here is a significant transitional point in the book of Exodus, more importantly, in the life of Moses. By way of background, Moses, of course, was a Hebrew born at a time when the Hebrews were pawns of Pharaoh, exploited for generations. They had built city after city for Pharaoh. He was born at a time when there was a death order from Pharaoh concerning infant Hebrew boys. Moses, his mother, was able to hide him for 3 months. Then she placed him in a basket among the reeds of the Nile. We know the story. He would be discovered by one of Pharaoh's daughters, who would adopt Moses as her own. Growing up in Pharaoh's household, Moses would have enjoyed the privileges of being in the leading household of all of Egypt, which meant he would have the best food, the best clothes, the best education, etc. But as he grew, he knew that he was different. He knew that he was a Hebrew, one of the same blood of the slaves whom he watched building cities for Pharaoh. And in chapter 2, when Moses was about 40 years old, he saw an Egyptian beating a fellow Hebrew. And he had seen this kind of thing for years. And he's had enough. And he kills the Egyptian. The next day, he sees two Hebrews fighting and he confronts them. And in response, one of the Hebrews said to Moses, "Do you mean to kill me as you killed that Egyptian?" Moses now knew that the word was out concerning what he had done. He would find out that Pharaoh also knew and intended to kill him. There's only one thing to do in Moses' mind, and that was to run away, get as far away as possible. So he runs into the wilderness, and eventually he finds himself working as a shepherd for his father-in-law. So there's Moses, in the prime of his life, having received the best education in Egypt, joined the wonderful privileges, and now he's a shepherd, a very degrading job in that day. According to Acts chapter 7, Moses was in the wilderness as a shepherd for 40 years. So when we come to our text, Moses is now 80 years old. Israel, of course, was suffering greatly as the result of Egyptian bondage. But the time had now come for God to deliver his people. And he would use Moses as an instrument in that deliverance. Coming to our text, we see that Moses had led the flock to the backside of the desert. And he has come to the mountain of God, even to Horeb. Horeb means desolate region, and it's the name of the mountain range. And the mountain of God, of course, would be Sinai, which is a part of that mountain range. Throughout the Old Testament, Sinai is a very special place. It was a place of God's glory. It was a place of God's calling. It was a place of God's communion. It was a place of revelation, a place of sanctification, a place of peace, a place of power. And there is Moses leading the sheep in this area. And God appears to Moses and calls him to his service. And without a doubt, what is recorded here has a very profound impact upon Moses. May we say, before one will ever truly serve God, God must have a profound impact upon them. If he doesn't, you will not serve him with your life. So what is recorded here is a life-changing incident with the Lord. And before one will ever truly serve God, they must have a life-changing incident in their life. There must be a God work upon the individual. I want to speak this morning. God prepared for his service. We need to be God prepared for the Lord's service. No other preparation will do. We must be God prepared. What does it mean to serve God? The call goes forth throughout the Word of God. We see it everywhere. It is a call regarding a position. We are the servant. He is the master. That position must always be recognized. We must always be aware of that position. We are the servant. He is the master. Which is a recognition that God has full rights over every aspect of our life. This call to service is a call that regards our life. It is a life call. It is a call to dedicate, to commit, to surrender ourselves to the government of God, to His will, to His rules, to His ways, to His interests. It is a call to be actively engaged, to be occupied in the business of the Lord. It is a call to put forth earnest effort, to give one's best, to give one's all to the Lord. It is a call to be available to the Lord. Again, this is throughout our life. To willingly place ourselves at the disposal of God. It is a call to attach ourselves to the Lord, to have an allegiance toward Him, and to be identified with Him. It is a call to prefer Him above all things. It is a call to esteem Him above all else. It is a call for God to be first and never next. Always first. In all of our plans, in all of our pursuits. We do not plan and then fit God into the plan. God is first. That's what it means to serve God. It is a call for God to be the purpose and the passion of our life. It is a call to be consumed, to be obsessed, to be engrossed in who God is and in His work. It is a call to be gripped by God. It is a call to put away all that would hinder in this service, all that would entangle, is a call to be faithful to God. It's a call to realize that we have an obligation to the Lord. It is a call to glorify Him, to show forth God in our life. It is a call to be holy, to walk with God, to please God, to stand for God. And this service to God is to be our life. Our thoughts, our attitudes, our outlooks, our decisions, our choices, our actions are all to revolve around service to God. I can't do that because that will not allow me to do what God tells me to do. Everything revolves around God. Now, as you look at service in that light, you come to the realization that there be very, very, very few who truly serve the Lord. Very few. It means that if we're called to serve God, we do not allow ourselves to become spiritually depleted, lest we lose heart in the service of the Lord. So we see what it means, what this call means. We want to look at God's call and preparation of Moses. God had a very important work for Moses to do. And it does for us as well. We're not called to lead a nation out of bondage. But if God's called you to do anything, it's important. So it's an important work. And for this work, Moses must be impacted and prepared by God. The work was to lead Israel out of bondage. God calls him. And God had been preparing Moses for this service. So let's look at how God prepared Moses. First of all, Moses was humbled. He'd spent 40 years in the desert tending sheep. He learned many valuable lessons in that desert tending sheep. God was preparing him for leading a people who are much like sheep. But during those 40 years, God humbled Moses. We read in Numbers chapter 12 and verse 3 that one of the chief characteristics of Moses was that he was meek. Said he was more meek than any man on the earth. Meekness is the disposition of gentleness, humility, and lowliness toward God and man. Toward God, it is a feeling of insignificance and unworthiness. And that is absolutely necessary if we are going to truly serve God. It shows itself in self-denial. It shows itself in submissiveness and contentment before God. The meekness of Moses is seen in his response to the call of God. In verse 4, he said, "Here am I." And in verse 11, he said, "Who am I?" He was manifesting meekness. Meekness toward man is the opposite of ill will. You can't serve God and have ill will toward man. It is the opposite of having malice and envy and bitterness toward others. It is basically the forbearance of others. It means that you are able to endure mistreatment of others. If you cannot endure mistreatment of others, you cannot serve God. Because you're going to be mistreated. It's going to happen. You need meekness. So God, knowing that, of course, humbled Moses in that wilderness. 40 years. Meekness isn't something you learn overnight. 40 years in the wilderness, Moses was humbled. So there is Moses on the backside of the desert. Way out in the distance, something catches the keen eye of Moses. He could see that something was burning. So Moses sets out to have a closer look. And he discovers that it's a bush that's on fire. And the closer he gets to the bush, the more incredible the scene becomes. It is stated in verse 2, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. This is miraculous. This is very mysterious. God then revealed himself to Moses. It is stated in verse 2, "And the angel of the Lord," and I believe the angel of the Lord in the Old Testament is Christ in bodily form, "the angel of the Lord appeared unto him." Not just spoke, but appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of the bush. This burning bush was not meant to just merely get the attention of Moses, but it would serve as a parable full of meaning that would prepare Moses for this life of service. So Moses sees a bush in flames, but not consumed. Moses saw a flame, fire engulfing a bush. Yet the bush was not consumed. He saw the destroying power of fire set upon a bush, and yet the bush is not destroyed. This is miraculous. In verse 3, Moses drew closer in order to discover why the bush is not burnt. And we read in verse 4 that God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. Here was the reason that the bush was not consumed. God was in the midst of it. There's a lesson there that Moses must carry with him for the rest of his life. So you have the revelation of God in the burning bush. It was meant to teach lessons to Moses. Lessons that would motivate and sustain him in the service that God would call him to. If you're going to serve God, you need to be motivated to do such. And God is the motivation. You also need to be sustained. And it is God who does this, the sustaining. What Moses saw and experienced that day would alter his life. It would be a controlling factor in his life. It would have a lasting impression upon him. In fact, in his dying days, in Deuteronomy 33 and 16, he refers to this experience. It's something that impacted him for the rest of his life. The burning bush was there for Moses to prepare him for service to God. Now notice how God revealed himself to Moses. If you're going to serve God, you need to know who you're serving. I'm afraid that's a big problem today. People talk about serving God and they don't even know who God is. You need to have some idea of who God is. And he's revealed here in this bush. The God of the burning bush, first of all, is a holy God. In verse 3, when God called unto him out of the bush, Moses, Moses, Moses replied, no doubt very meekly, here am I. But Moses knew that voice. And he stepped toward the bush. And in verse 4, God said, draw not hither. Moses, stop right where you are. For the place wherein thou standest is holy ground. God was displaying his glory. Before Moses could truly serve God, he must behold the glory of God. The glory of God is who God is. Why must we behold the glory of God if we're going to serve him? Because that's what it's all about. The glory of God. And Moses was impressed with the holiness of the one who was manifesting himself. God is holy. That means that he is set apart from all that is common. He's set apart. And if you're going to serve God, you must be set apart from that which is common. God is holy. That means He's perfectly sinless. He's undefiled. He's spotless. He's unblemished. And Moses is made to feel the holiness of God. And so must we, if we're going to serve the Lord. That's what happened to Isaiah in Isaiah chapter 6. He saw and he felt the holiness of the Lord. Also, the God of the burning bush is a covenant-making, covenant-keeping God. Verse 6, the voice out of the bush said, I am the God of thy father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And that is repeated in verse 15. But notice the reaction of Moses in verse 6. And Moses hid his face. There was a majesty. I am God. Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. God was there. He was afraid to look upon God. And then we see, again, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. What does that mean? It has to be significant because it's repeated twice. It means that He is the God of grace. God had singled out Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. It also means that He is the God of promise. He is the God who pledged Himself to these men. If you're going to serve God, this has to impact us. God is a God of grace. He is a God of promise. But notice also, He is a personal God. I am the God of Abraham. I am the God of Isaac. I am the God of Jacob. He is the God of Abraham. That means He is the sovereign elector, the one who chose us before the foundation of the world. He is the God of Isaac, the almighty quickener, the one who by His own miraculous power brought us from death and made us new creatures in Christ. He is the God of Jacob, the long-suffering one, the one who bears with us with infinite patience and who never forsakes us. In service to God, we need to remember this God who has promised. We need to always remember Him. Also, the God of the burning bush is a compassionate God. For over 400 years, the Israelites must have thought, and it appeared to them that God was distant, that God was removed, that God was uninvolved in their lives. But that was not the case. Notice verse 7. And the Lord said, I have seen. Notice a little further in that verse. He heard. And He closes with, I know their sorrows. In verse 9, now therefore behold, the cry of the children of Israel is come unto Me, and I have also seen the oppression wherewith the Egyptians oppressed them. God did see. God did hear. And God did know. He was aware. He was not indifferent to their circumstances. He was not indifferent to their need. He is a compassionate and involved God. That must be remembered in our service. The God of the burning bush is a God of purpose. Verse 8, He says, I am come down. Again, showing once again that angel of the Lord, I am come down to deliver. I am come down to deliver. I am come down to bring them up out of the land of Egypt. Now, if he has come down to deliver, he must be more powerful than what holds his people. If he has come down to bring them up out of the land, he must be more powerful than that which was holding them. He excels and is beyond all. That must be remembered all through our life of service. The God of the burning bush is a God willing to use and go with his people in his service. Notice verse 10. Remember, God told him back in verse 4, stop right where you are. Don't come any closer. And then in verse 10, come. Come. Come now, therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh. It is I that send you so that you might bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. Verse 12, and he said, certainly I will be with thee. Moses, I am sending you to bring my people out of Egypt. And I will be with you. It is God who empowers in his service. You don't have to work it up. If God doesn't empower you, you're not going to find it anywhere else. It is God who empowers in his service. And he does so by going with us. The God of the burning bush is. In response to Moses, God said, no doubt in a very majestic, awe-inspiring voice, I am that I am. I am. That declares his being. That declares his essence. That declares his existence. He is saying, I am what I've always been. I am what I am. I am what I shall be. In other words, whatever God has been, whatever he was, he is. And whatever he was and is, he will continue to be. In other words, I am who I am. It is a declaration of his immutability. No power, no circumstance, no need can alter who he is. Need to always remember that. Whether I'm up or down, God is who he is. Whether it be day or night, God is who he is. Whether it be a time of strength or a time of weakness, God is. Whether it be a time of need or a time of provision, God is who he is. And may I say, God is who he is all by himself. He does not need help. He does not need assistance. God was God before you and I came along. And God will be God when we're gone. He's God all by himself. No one appointed him to be God. No one can impeach him. We say that society is trying to remove God, and they are, but you can't. Because God is who he is. No one appointed him, and you can't impeach him. He exists apart from any dependence on anything or anyone. We hear him say in Isaiah 45 and 22, "For I am God and there is none else." Oh, how we need to hear that. There is none else. I am God. This had a great impact upon Moses and would help him in his service to the Lord. In serving God, we need to constantly hear that majestic voice of God declaring, "I am." No matter what the magnitude of the service be, no matter what problems be involved, no matter what trials there might be or difficulties or needs, no matter what our infirmities and what impossibilities may exist in the service of the Lord, hear God say, "I am what I am. I am God. I am God." And we need to hear it in such a way that leaves an impact upon us. Notice also Moses must see not only God, but he must see his service in relation to God. That's the problem today. A lot of people want to serve God, but they want to do it apart from God. It doesn't work that way. You're the servant, he's the master. So we need to see our service in relation to God. God said to Moses in verse 10, "I will send thee unto Pharaoh." Moses replies, "Who am I that I should go, that I should bring forth?" Moses realized the greatness of the task, and he was aware of his own inability. And notice God's answer. The question is, who am I? Who am I that I should go, that I should bring forth? And in verse 12, hear God's answer. "Certainly I will be with thee." I will be with thee. His answer was himself. "Moses, it doesn't matter who you are. What matters is who I am." Oh, that we would grasp that truth. God's answer is himself. Still so. He's telling Moses, the task is not dependent upon your abilities. The task is not dependent upon your wisdom or your strength. The task is dependent upon me. And I will go with you. I, the God of the unconsumed bush. I, the holy God, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. The compassionate God. The God who will work his purpose. And who is above all and who always is. I will be with thee. I will be with thee. So who's the important character in the account? It's God. And who's the important character when it comes to serving God? It's God. It's God. What is important is not the instrument in God's hand, but the one in whose hand the instrument is. That's what's important. It's whose hand we are in. So we must realize our identity with God if we're going to truly serve the Lord. So here we are in a desert time, just like Moses. A land of Pharaoh, a land of many Pharaohs. And as it was with Moses, so it is with us. This Pharaoh knew not Joseph. He was ignorant of his person. He had no regard for Joseph. And we live in a time when people know not Joseph. They know not Jesus. They're ignorant of Jesus. And this Pharaoh had an agenda. And Pharaoh always has an agenda. The agenda was the bondage of those identified with Joseph. He desired to shape their lives for the purpose of control and keeping them in bondage. And this world desires to control and to keep in bondage the child of God. If you're going to serve God, you have to overcome Pharaoh. Whatever that Pharaoh might be, whatever form that Pharaoh might take in your life. But I guarantee you there are Pharaohs in your life, things that are seeking to control you so you can't serve God. Things that are trying to keep you in bondage so you can't serve God. And Pharaoh is so wise, he is so good that he convinces you, you can't do it without me. This is what you have to do. He's convinced God's people of that. Well, God knows my situation, and God knows if God wants me to do this, he's going to have to change it. They've been convinced by a Pharaoh that you're to build cities. Again, the Hebrews were building cities for Pharaoh. And God's people spend most of their time building things and cities for Pharaoh rather than serving God. If we're going to serve God, we need to be impacted by who God is. There needs to be an incident. There needs to be an event in our life that we can't get away from. It began with salvation. And many have gotten over that. But they need an event in their life where God appears. And He speaks directly to them. Preachers today wear themselves out trying to get people to serve God who do not know Him. And they wear themselves out, and I believe that's of the devil as well. They don't have time for anything else. Because they're begging and pleading with goats that know not the Lord. They're trying to get people to serve who have no desire to serve. Because they have no knowledge of God. We are called to serve the Lord. None of us know how many more years or days or hours that we have. But if God has saved us by His grace, we have been called to serve God. We have been called to serve God with our life. Now our mode of service may change as we get older and as different things come into our lives. But we are to serve God with all of our life, all of our life. We're to serve Him. We need to know who we're serving. We need to know who we're serving. I am. Oh, hear Him say it over and over. I am. How many times we need God to come into the midst of our situation and say, I am! And that it would impact our lives. That we would serve the Lord. Oh, we need to get our eyes off of things, circumstances, people. I don't understand. I try not to go there. Why a person who claims to have been saved by the amazing grace of God has no interest in God? That's discouraging. And it's discouraging when you see people put things ahead of the Lord time and time and time and time again and see nothing wrong with it. They're not bothered by it. It's discouraging. It discourages me. It discourages others. But we have to learn. I can't dwell on those things. I've got to get focused upon who He is. Because there is motivation there. There's motivation there. There's not motivation. There's not much motivation in people. But there's motivation in I am. That's what we need to get focused on. Because we can get down. We can develop bad attitudes when we get our eyes off of the Lord and get our eyes upon unfaithfulness. God help us be so impacted by the presence of the Lord that we can never get away from it. We can never get away from it. Oh, that the I am would appear to us today. And that we, for the remaining days of our life, would just serve God. Just serve the Lord. And as we've preached in the past, from the book of Joshua, we need to plan to serve God. What I observe, and again, I can't get stuck there. Well, I can, but I shouldn't. People don't plan to serve God. They make their plans that would keep them from serving God. We need to plan to serve God. Circumstances change, but this is my plan. I'm going to serve the Lord. I'm going to serve the Lord. Places change, but this is our plan. I'm going to serve God. We need to plan to serve God. God help us to be a people who will serve Him. We have every reason to do so. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.